The Art of Leadership Network.
Just curious, do you want this to go well or not? Right. And I mean, it's kind of rhetorical. Okay. You want it to go well. So would you be happy or unhappy if attendance doubles in the next 5 years? You'd be happy. That's how most, you know, nearly 100% of everybody answers it, you know. And how do you think you react? I'm going to react really well. I'm like, okay. Let me just give you a little line. Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands.
Welcome to Leaders in Living Rooms. I'm your host, Sean Morgan, bringing you access and insights to leaders and their stories. Hey, leaders, as always, it is a joy to have you listening in to another episode, and I'm super excited for this one to kick off with William Vanderblomen. I want to pause, and I don't do this very much at the beginning of the episodes, but I want to just ask you to put your antennas up and listen. If you are a leader approaching a succession or a transition, particularly if you're an incoming leader, a new lead pastor, getting ready to step into a succession transition process, or maybe you're even a few years in and you're beginning to see how complex transitions leadership is, I want you to go to theartofpastoralsuccession.com, theartofpastoralsuccession.com. About 10,000 hours of my time and energy and learning around church transitions leadership is put into a brand new course with Carrie Newhoff. And you can find that course at theartofpastoralsuccession.com. You're going to get best practices. You're going to learn the potholes to avoid. You're going to learn how to lead a staff you didn't hire. You're going to learn new forms of change management that you need to implement during transitions leadership. So I would tell you, this is one of the best tools and sets of content out there for transitions leaders. If you're an outgoing lead pastor, about a third of this course is for you. There's a real blend of leadership between the outgoing and the incoming, but nearly 80%, 70 to 80% is for the incoming lead pastor. Please check that course out. I think it'll equip you beyond your wildest imagination, theartofpastoralsuccession.com. Now let's dive into this episode with William Vanderblomen, author of Next. He's been involved in many successions and transitions. We get to approach it really from two different sides. He's primarily involved with the outgoing leader planning for succession, bringing in a new leader, an incoming lead pastor through their search and recruiting firm, Vanderblomen. And I've been primarily involved with the incoming leader, really leading after the baton pass. And you get two distinct viewpoints on succession and just how difficult and odd some of those seasons are, but how important and critical they are to do well. So I think you're going to love this episode with William Vanderblomen. Can't wait to dive into that. Thank you so much to Food for the Hungry. FH.org is their website. If you're looking for a missional partner for your church, I highly recommend Food for the Hungry and what they do to transform lives around the world. FH.org. And here we go with William Vanderblomen. Hey, podcasters, welcoming William Vanderblomen to the show. I've been following William, his work, his leadership stuff that he's got out there in the forms of blogs and webinars and certainly his podcast. So it is so good to have you on as a guest talking about leadership transitions and succession.
Well, Sean, I've listen to the living room. I read about the living room, and now I'm finally in the living room. So it's a good day over here. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, it's so good. As we talked about doing this, I think you said, as you often do very succinctly, that we've approached succession from two sides. And most of my work has been helping leaders after the baton pass. How do you lead forward from that moment? And you've been involved through early planning with the outgoing leaders and involved, obviously, in the recruitment and placement and all of those types of things on the front end. So I would love just to compare and contrast a few things. Let's maybe start off with, what sort of things do you see as top factors in creating a successful transition?
Well, if there are, and by the way, I do really appreciate the acknowledgement there. People say, this is kind of weird. William does succession, Sean does succession. Actually, it's really, in my mind, two sides of the same coin or two sides of an equation. You know, we're helping get the baton passed and you're helping afterward. And I'm just thankful for your work on in that lane and that part of the work. The nature of our thing is that it be over once we're, you know, plugged in, and to know that there's good people in sort of aftercare, if you will, is really great. I can't tell you how many people where we've done the succession and now the new pastor is in one of your cohorts, or that might not be the right word, but it's pretty funny. It we have a very similar mail list in that regard. So, so what makes for a good succession? So if there were 10 factors, the top 10 factors that make for a good succession, the first 9 would be called the outgoing pastor. Mm. I've never done a succession where the outgoing pastor has said to me, you know, I woke up one day and I realized what I need to do with this last part of my run is hand the church off to somebody and then blow the whole thing up. I just never heard anybody say that, but you know, we've done a lot of data-driven study over the years. We wrote Next a long time ago and then wrote an updated version that released in 2020. By the way, next time we have a pandemic, don't release your book on the day the world shuts down. It's not a good idea. So, but if you haven't seen the newer edition, it's got 100 extra pages of research in it and a whole lot of years of learning since we wrote the first one. But in every succession, the outgoing pastor really is the make or break. And that might be bad news for some of your listeners, because the data is really clear that particularly the more legendary the pastor was, or the longer shadow they cast, the more the success of the succession rides on them. I know when I pastored, I have followed failure and I have followed success, and following failure is a whole lot easier than following success. Now, I had good previous pastors in both instances, but it's much more tricky to follow somebody who is legendary.
So I love that, because I do think it so much does depend on the outgoing lead pastor. You talked about cast a shadow, but I want to play that word a different way. How does the shadow side of the outgoing leader affect the transition? In particular, I think we have all run into people in their 40s, late 40s, 50s, and 60s who didn't deal with young men problems. And so now they're old men with young men problems because they didn't deal with them when they were 30. And that's something that I have seen creep in. It's maybe an identity thing for them, maybe I need to get the credit kind of thing. But those shadowy sides of a leader, and we all have them. Let's just pause there. We're not casting shade on people. Like, we all are human. We all have our issues. But to the extent that we deal with them and surrender to them and lead well despite them, not conquer them completely, how do you see that stuff creep in? And let's just put our hat on that you and I are both new incoming lead pastors, and we're looking at being called into becoming a first-time lead pastor, stepping into a church that's in existence, and we're having this conversation about who are you replacing and how are they doing emotionally and spiritually. Let's go there.
Well, I think some of the first questions I try and ask, I remember the first day I ever went to counseling. And the counselor, maybe you've had this happen, the first question a good counselor asks is, so why are we here today? And that question stuck with me. And I think when you arrive at a new church, you have to say, so why am I here today? In other words, why did the opening happen? You know, what created this vacancy that God's called me to fill? Okay, so it's going to be wildly different. I think people mistakenly assume that succession and retirement are synonyms. They're not. You know, you're going to go through succession. My home church growing up, we were a church about 500 in a small town. We were the county seat and First Presbyterian Church. we have a pastor come along every so often, and they almost always graduated to a big church. It was like we were a double-A ball club in the kingdom or something, and, you know, they would move on. So we were used to, you know, there's going to be a time when this person isn't here. They'll go on to the big leagues or wear pinstripes or whatever analogy you want to use. And so the new guy coming in didn't have nearly the expectation or baggage. It's just like, hey, we're all used to this. Take on the other side of the coin. I know a lot of people you're working with are following founders. Well, that's a whole different thing, entirely different. So I think starting with the question of why are we here today, and even lean in a little bit more and say, why did the previous pastor actually have to leave?
Yeah.
I've seen a few that leave because they really want to, and they want to go out on a high note. I know, you know, Eric Geiger at Mariners followed Kenton Bishore, and Kenton could have stayed as long as he wanted. And really is kind of he is the model to me of how it can go.
Yeah.
But most of the time underneath the retirement or the moving on, that there is a precipitating set of events, and I would want to understand those. And that I think is where you'll see that shadow side. The second thing I'd say to an incoming leader is, particularly if you're coming with the after a founder, or what I call, like Kenton did not found Mariners, but I'd call him the legacy pastor. It was 50 or 100 people when he came, and you know, there's no one who knew another pastor in the land kind of thing by the time he retired. I would just say, as an incoming person, you need to try your best to put yourself in the emotional space that outgoing pastor's in. Because it is like there is no job on the planet, except maybe being a head of state, that consumes more of a person's identity than being a pastor. It's where you do your work. It's where you do your spiritual journey. It's where you do your life and family. It's where your kids grow up. You bury people. You marry people. And when you leave that,
indeed,
that's hard. But when you have to hand it off to somebody, I'm guessing that's harder than walking your little girl down the aisle and handing her off to some new dude. And so emotionally, these guys, if they're able to do the kind of things that I'm using Kenton as an example, that's highly unusual. That takes a level of emotional capacity that's very, very rare. So I would encourage the incoming person to try and get in that emotional space. You can feel that shadow side. And, you know, if it's a legacy pastor, chances are they were pastor back when the church only had 200 people or 100 people, and they did every little job. And as the church grew, they did every little job. And the new reality won't be the same way. We have a client of a very, very large church in the Midwest where we handled the succession. It's gone great. The outgoing pastor, when we left, this is a church with several hundred on the payroll and well over 10, 15,000 in attendance. He was approving every purchase order. Like, wow. But that's what he had done from when the church was brand new. And he just, so when a detail comes along that's not going the way he's used to it, like he's just used to being in every detail, and he grew with the job. So you can I think if you're incoming, if you can find a way to just get inside the space of the person's head and emotions and ask yourself, why are we here today? I think that'd be two great ways to begin to understand what you're facing. And as you might imagine, the more you can do as an incoming person to learn and honor the legacy of the outgoing pastor and the church, the better.
Absolutely. You hit on that in a way that I think is so important, because years ago, decades ago, there was a book on marriage, and it talked about how when one person can do something to get under the other person's skin, and then the other spouse does, and you go in, I think they called it the crazy cycle. I don't remember if it was men are from Mars, women are from Venus, but it was one of those books back then. And it was so accurate. It's like, yes, you end up, it almost should have been called, instead of the crazy cycle, it should have been called the crazy death spiral, because it is this spiral, and it builds and it gets worse. And I think with the incoming and outgoing leaders, there's something magical that happens when they're both surrendered to God's provision and their subsequent role in that, and there's honor and care for one another. I tell people all the time, I don't know of any easy succession. I know that some that went well and some that went didn't, but neither were easy. So it's a commitment to work, but what have you seen from incoming and outgoing that allow them to build each other up day in and day out, week in and week out as these, this succession isn't a date. We all know that. It's not a date. It's a process.
Well, I think, we're recording this. I don't know when it'll air, but we just buried Benedict, the Pope, the only, I think there's one other, maybe 1,000 years ago that stepped down, but like it's it. We were actually on vacation in Rome when Francis was elected, and it was a pretty amazing thing to watch the whole deal. Funny story, Instagram had just started, and Adrian and I got a picture of the two of us on the square with the smoke going up behind us.
I was going to say the white smoke or the gray smoke.
No, the white smoke. And the caption of the picture was, it always feels good to finish a big search. And our lapsed Catholic friends are like, did y'all really help? I said, I can't talk about that. I can't tell you whether. Anyway.
You're like, there he was in the Vatican.
That's right.
Problem
anyway,
solver.
Watching how Francis honored Benedict without beatifying Benedict. I think that's a lesson for incoming pastors. You want to honor the outgoing pastor, but you don't want to beatify him. It's so funny, Sean, when I was a pastor, the verses God would bring to mind were I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and neither death nor life, all the standard sort of verses and bedside manner. Now that I have done this for 15 years, I have the strangest verses that come to mind at work. And one of them is, when you think of succession, the Bible verse is often, there's a way that seems right to a man,
but in the end,
and it's a way that ends in death. Yeah. Destruction, annihilation. So there are a lot of things that are good intentions. For instance, I have never seen a good example of an incoming pastor naming a building after a living outgoing pastor and it ending well. I was like, just wait till people die before you name buildings, because then it gets, I'm serious. I mean, I can tell some horror stories of things getting territorial. And that's what I mean. There's a difference between honoring and blessing and beatifying.
Yeah.
When you tell a story, you never tell a story with yourself as the hero, right? You always make the hero somebody else. Well, you don't have to make the outgoing pastor the hero. You can make the work of Jesus in the church through the pastor the hero, or the work of the elders that were there. Because the thing I think I see be a real speed bump to succession, especially in churches where it's a founder or a legacy pastor, is everyone forgets that the board and the key influencers in the church are also getting older, but it's an entire ecosystem that's going through succession, and they get left in the dust and they need to be honored. And then finally, I'd say, for the incoming person and the outgoing person, where it really works well is when both parties remember who the owner of the church is. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
We had a client one time, and I've told him I use this. He was young and had a great idea, but like a lot of great ideas, it went the wrong way. He named the church that he planted My Church. And I'm like, dude, I'm pretty sure it's not. And I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to create a sense of ownership. And, this is a word. But if you can remember that this was Jesus' church before you, outgoing pastor, were here, and he will see it to the end. And if you, incoming person, can remember it's Jesus' church, if you can remember ownership, it makes things a lot smoother.
Yeah, that's some of the best advice, is just that attitude. Because then you take things a little less personally. That's really important. That's so important. We did a survey with Barna about churches, and it's available on our website and also on the CDF Capital website. But we surveyed different categories of people. How's the transition going? And, you know, we surveyed the incoming leader, the outgoing leader. We surveyed what you just described as bridge leaders, elders and stakeholders that are kind of leading both before and after the transition. And then we surveyed the church at large. So we had these different categories. And no matter which way we asked the question or when in the timeline we asked the question, the person who said the lowest ranking or gave the lowest ranking in terms of how's the church doing through the transition. You want to know which role it was? It was always the outgoing leader. And even if they said it was going good, everybody else would rate it as great. And if they said it was going, you know, moderate, everybody else might say it was going good. So their ranking was always the lowest ranking. And I think the part of that is that it becomes so personal, like you talked about, identity. Every decision that turns into something new at the church means something you did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago is being unraveled in order to implement the new change. And it's really difficult in those situations not to take it personally. I retired from the Air Force Reserve recently, and I was at one point in time the chief pilot of my squadron. And I remember when I stepped down from that role, it wasn't very long when a group of people that used to come to me for advice walked around me to go to my successor and get advice from him. And I remember the sting in that moment thinking, I was dumb enough to think you wanted my opinion. You actually just needed my opinion because I held that role. And those types of things that gave me some real insight into that of just how difficult that can be. So I think you hit the nail on the head of don't take it so personally because it's not yours. It's God's. We're stewards.
Yeah. Well, and I think, one of the best leadership talks I've ever heard about leading cross generations, Craig, our friend Groeschel gave a long time ago at a conference. It was about if you're older, you pour into the people below you. And if you're younger, you give honor to the people above you. And it's just this beautiful equation. And when those two things can happen, a whole lot of good can happen. I was reminded of it. I saw a recent interview with George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. And it's kind of gone viral, so a lot of people have probably seen it, asking how they ended up being friends. And W stopped short of saying, well, Dad said I had to. But his dad, who was kind of a one-termer and lost to this kid from Hope, Arkansas, really befriended Clinton. And that's what W pointed to. He said, the thing is, two things happen. Bill Clinton never dishonored my dad once he took office. He respected, they campaigned against each other, but he never dishonored Dad. And Dad respected the office enough that he reached out to him and poured into him. And I learned from that, and now I'm trying to do the same thing. And I thought, that's not even like in a pastoral succession, theoretically, we're all on Team Jesus. We're all like, these are guys on opposite ends of the spectrum in the swamp of a town that we, So I think it's that, can you honor the ones above or before, and can you pour into and serve the ones below? And if those things happen, it's great. And we, when we start a succession, we'll often say to the outgoing pastor, so just curious, do you want this to go well or not? Right. And it's kind of rhetorical. Okay. You want it to go well. So would you be happy or unhappy if attendance doubles in the next 5 years? You'd be happy. That's how most, nearly 100% of everybody answers it, And how do you think you'll react? I'm going to react really well. I'm like, okay. Let me just give you a little line. Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And they all go, oh, I said, so here's the thing. The enemy is going to tempt you to get mad at the good work you did to prepare this place for the next guy. Yeah. And when you frame it as, hey, this is your win. Eric Geiger would not be doing what he's doing had Kenton Beshore did what he did. And at the end, get back to the ownership. Isn't it great that Jesus is doing all this and that we're all interim pastors?
So good. You said another thing I want to go back to just briefly is you talked about walking your daughter down the aisle, and there's a lot of metaphors in that. And somebody pointed out to me one of the things that's different, because you said they're not, it's not the same, and it might be more difficult if you're a founder or a legacy leader. They said, in this role, I get replaced. In my daughter's life, I'm still her dad. My role's different. My role's changed, but she didn't get a new dad and change. And I said, yeah, there is that dynamic. So I'm thinking about one dynamic that we can shift gears into, and it is you will hire a successor, an incoming leader, from one of two areas, either from within the church or from outside the church. As you talk to people about that, I'm just curious, what sort of wisdom do you have? Like, why would a church lean one way or the other? Pros and cons, those sorts of things.
Well, let me back up and disagree with you. Sorry. I don't think I think the metaphor holds. You do get replaced, but you have a new role. And just to talk a little, not to go all former preacher on you, but retirement's only mentioned a couple times in the Bible. And, you know, I'm such a bad volunteer recruiter. When I was a pastor, I'd stand up and say, there's no retirement in the Bible. If you're older, you can serve and blah, blah, blah. It's just terrible. But I remember reading in the Old Testament about retirement, and it's only for the priests. So there is retirement in the Bible. It's mandatory at a certain age, and not to sound like all super hyper spiritual, but it was prescribed, and they were carrying around in the desert like the single worst load in load out church ever, like all those tassels and candlesticks and crap. they were marching, they get all set up, and then the cloud of the Lord moved, and like, are you kidding me? We've got it. Okay, I was going to say retirement was prescribed because, this is William's paraphrase, at a certain age, carrying the things of God every day is too great for a man. And I can't tell you how many people I talk to that say, I got 10 more years of preaching in me. I'm great, but I can't do the day-to-day anymore. And so you look at the Bible and you look at how retirement is laid out for the priests, and two things happen. One thing was the church financially cared for the retiring pastor for the rest of his life. That's hard to replicate, but it's something worth thinking about. Maybe the pension, something, you mentioned it early in the podcast. Maybe the number one roadblock to a good succession is the pastor cannot afford to retire. Number one of all that I've seen. And then the second thing that happened in retirement is the retiring priest still had to serve, just not in that capacity. So you are getting replaced as primary man in this girl's world, but you've got a new role.
Yeah.
And if the outgoing church, if the church and the outgoing pastor can come to some idea of what is my new, I use the word apostolic role, and maybe it's in the life of the church or in the life of the denomination or the movement or something, where is my new form of service? Because the service doesn't die, it just changes modes. And you're not getting replaced, you're just getting promoted to a new part of the work in the kingdom. So disagree with you on the
Well, and I wasn't trying to disagree with the entire metaphor. I was saying it's one thing that's different. Let me hit you up with a follow-up question to that. It's kind of a juicy thing I don't think most people want to talk about, but I'll talk about it. You probably will too. Is there a time when a pastor needs to just leave the church? Like the outgoing pastor just needs to get out? Like that this is a situation that's probably just not going to go well for a variety of different potential reasons. But you would look at it and go, sticking around here is just probably not the best situation.
This is such a good question. It's just at the heart of a whole lot of different things. Sean, we've completed 3,000 pastoral transitions. Okay. Probably consulted 5,000 churches, and I'm training some new staff today because we're growing. And as I'm training them, I'm like, hey guys, listen, if you 3,000 successions, 5,000 churches we work with, let me just tell you what I've learned. If you've seen one church, you've seen about one church. That's all. So it's highly contextual. I mean, in some cases, the normal size church of 300 where the pastor was just going to stay in town. And he used to have the manse next to the church. Now he has a home, but his daughter lives in the manse next to the, like next door to the church with the, like right. It can get a little hairy, right? And when I grew up in the Presbyterian church, when you retired, the rule was you disengaged from any contact with people for a full year. And you only came back at the invitation of the new pastor, which is a great idea, but that was before the internet. And I think a pastor can disengage and move to the other side of the planet and still have every bit the influence that they would if they were living right next door. So it's a tricky thing. I do think that one consideration boards might make if they're going through a succession is to try and create some measure of space for a limited amount of time. What do I mean when I say that? Well, maybe it's my growing up that's coming through where I saw these pastors go away for a year. But we often build into the succession that it could be through the board or some designated fund or a love offering, if that's your jam. But let's get some money together and let's send the pastor in, assuming they're married, pastor's spouse, on about a six-month vacation. Get them a VRBO wherever. Maybe they want to live in the mountains for 6 months. Maybe they want to live by the beach. Let them go to Europe, whatever it is. Give them enough time. And I'm going to sound really jaded here. Your listeners are going to think there is just no way this man's getting into heaven. But I think the new pastor needs to have either Christmas or Easter without the previous one there, one or the other, right? And enough time to have one really good funeral. Now that's where you're like, "What? Who is this guy?" I mean, it doesn't have to be a funeral. It could be 9/11. It could be a pandemic. It's something, you know, those moments that glue the new guy. Now it's George W. Bush doing the bullhorn speech. He became my president that day, everybody says. So like, if you as a board can create some space, and it doesn't cost nearly as much money as having him stick around and mess things up. The most expensive succession you'll ever do is the one that messes up. So spend the money, let them go away, and create a little space for the new guy to get glued to the congregation.
I love that. Love that. Both those great things of advice. And one of them, you can't really, like, you can plan ahead for the money. You can't really plan ahead for those moments when the leader truly becomes a leader. And I think it's important. We talk about this a lot in the course, the Art of Pastoral Succession, is you step into the role, you have the title, but you don't yet have the heads and hearts of the people. And you just describe some of those moments where that begins to happen. I can tell you the moment it happened for Brady Boyd at New Life Church as he followed Ted Haggard and so many other situations. And God creates those moments. And if we're lucky, we look to him and lead well in those moments, and then he does his magic. Last question from me before we wrap up. You talked about money. I think it's a really important part of this entire equation. We've actually hinted at it a couple times in the discussion. Is, in my opinion, I would say the lack of financial planning by church leaders. It's not just the outgoing leader, but the elders, many of them very gifted financially, savvy, experience, they just knowledge and understanding. I would say because the church doesn't plan well, you described Old Testament church leaders, essentially the Levites being provided for financially after their mandatory retirement. That still happens in a lot of areas. You can look at the Church of England, those types of things, the Catholic Church. And in a lot of the churches in the U.S., especially non-denominational and independent churches, it's not happening. I think the lack of planning around that is hurting the church because we can't approach succession with the right wins and incentives all being aligned around the health of the church because now we've got this other thing. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. And I think if you think about churches and what their corporate equivalent would be, I'll lay that out. It'll give you a better idea. And you can ask this of your own church. Like if you're last church I was senior pastor of, First Presbyterian Houston, Sam Houston attended church there. It's been around a while, right? It functions more like one of the big three automotives. Like they've got a pension plan set up. It's with the national denomination. It's contributed to, it's mandatory. It's just part of the deal. And if you finish out your 65 years, you're not going to make a ton of money, but you'll be provided for, right? Right. You think about I don't know what retirement planning looks like at, I'm going to get hate mail. Like, what is it like at Elevation Church or, at a newer church that's really more like a startup, which is thinking more about how do we get things done right here and now and hasn't had to live through that founder leading. We do one thought I would have, and I'm so glad to partner with you and Carrie on this course on pastoral transition. And one of the things that just doesn't get talked about is money. Pastors don't want to talk about their salary. I mean, if you're a pastor and you got into ministry for the money, then you're either dumb or a crook or both. so you just don't bring it up, and churches don't know what to do with it. And because all these independent churches have risen up over the last 30 and 40 years, there's no standard. There's no bishop. There's no district superintendent to say this is normal. So we've spent we've been aggregating data for 15 years, but for the last 7 years, we've actually put algorithms behind it. And like, we have the largest living database of compensation that there is. And we encourage churches, do a compensation study regularly, especially if you're in one of these fast-growing churches with a founder. Chances are your church is growing faster than your salaries. And then when the pastor gets toward the end, he hadn't been paid enough. We got one guy, I won't out him, but we did a study for him, and we couldn't get data for the first 3 years of the church. You get paid so little? And he and his family had lived in the church building, not manse, like just in the church, and that was part of his pay. So we end up having to do these things like, okay, over the last 10 years, we're going to open a rabbi trust. We're going to do some makeup pay to make up for the years that you were underpaid so that you're set up. I just think that doing a regular compensation study is a big thing. And I'd also say one other win that a church board can do for a new pastor is set up money, not a person in the church, but money in the pastor's package that is earmarked solely for the use of a certified financial planner. And 9 times out of 10, churches are going to say, oh, we've got some of those in our church we can get, and they're great and they're wonderful. Pastors don't want to share all that with their people. You need an independent, like a great Jewish CFP. Hire one of those and make that pastor do planning from day one, so that as John Maxwell mentored me for a long time, and he told me when I was a young pastor, he said, listen, William, wise leaders spend their early years creating options for their later years. And that's what good financial planning does. So that's just a couple thoughts, probably more than you wanted.
Yeah, that's great. And I would just say for our listeners out there, the sooner those things happen, the better. It's discerning to hire a financial planner for your pastor who doesn't go to your church versus use the free one in your church. Not that the right heart isn't there, but there are dynamics that are not helpful to reach those end goals. So I love the insight there. Thank you a ton for that. I do want to just remind our listeners one thing. You talked about Kenton. We have Kenton and Lori on our podcast like early on, episode 6, 7, right around there. And they do a great job of talking about how early, like not 5 years early, like 10, 12 years before the succession, what they decided to do was begin unpacking the emotional journey they needed to go on that they knew would potentially take a decade to be really ready to transition. And like you, I often find myself referring to Kenton, again, not because it was easy, but because he was willing to be strategic and to do the hard work to get himself in a position where the church was ready for a successor. And he could really get behind and put wind in the sails of his successor, and through God's provision and lots of hard work and prayer, that became Eric Geiger.
It's a great episode to listen to. I've listened to it. And if you listen to it, you'll probably discover what I was kind of behind the scenes for a lot of that journey. The real secret sauce to Kenton's succession was Lori's succession. Lori was running all the outreach for the church, and she did a marvelous job of stepping aside and showing Kenton how to do it, frankly. And so it's a great episode. People should go listen.
Yeah. William, this has been so good, rich super knowledgeable. Like you said, this isn't one or two churches. I read a book from somebody about succession recently. It was a great book, but it was about their succession. It wasn't around the Big C church succession. It was around one church and the dynamics, which was great. It's also super important to have a wide cross section, which you have. And I thank you for stewarding that well. Thanks for diving into the conversation with us. Always love learning from you.
Thanks, man. Appreciated a chance to be in the living room. Love what you're doing, and I'm honored to be a part of this.
Wow. Thanks again, William. Very transparent conversation and very helpful. I want to pause and thank Food for the Hungry for sponsoring this episode. If your church is looking for a ministry partner that handles global poverty issues, I can recommend none other than Food for the Hungry. Their approach to engaging with communities and building sustainability within the communities is really unique. If you're a church looking for a partnership, fh.org/churches is the best place to go on their website. Food for the Hungry, thank you for your sponsorship.
Wow. Leaders, thank you so much for tuning in. We are just blown away by all the things that you guys tell us that this is doing to grow you and develop you. And I'll tell you what, if you feel like this is growing you as a leader, as a person, as a pastor, we would be honored if not only would you continue to listen, but if you would subscribe, if you would get on social and say something so that the people you have influence over can see the ways that this is benefiting you and that they would check us out as well. That would mean the world to us. Thank you so much for listening.